Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and he's here with me today. Good day, sir.
Welcome to my humble abode.
It's great to be here. Today we're talking about your article that appeared in the Reader on July 15th, 2015, titled "The Next Great Cause in Chicago, a Financial Transaction Tax."
Something you know quite a bit about.
And not as much as I'm going to. You wrote of the announcement by Mayor Rahm Emanuel that the city will stop spending money on new projects in 7 tax increment financing districts in and around the Central Business District. And the city will terminate those districts when it finishes spending on existing projects. You noted that this leaves 150 TIF districts in place.
Yeah, we'll give or take a few.
Go into that later. Yeah. You also advocated for the city to impose a financial transaction tax on the buying and selling of stocks and commodities within Chicago's 4 trading exchanges.
Yes.
For the uninitiated, we should probably once again talk about what tax increment financing is and how it works in Chicago, the Twitter version.
It's a scam in which the city applies a surcharge to the property taxes you pay in the name of things like schools and parks and the county, and then takes that surcharge, which amounts to approximately, well, it varies, $300 to $400 to $500 million a year, depending on what year, and siphons it off to bank accounts controlled by the mayor. So essentially, it's a slush fund that's generated by the property taxes that Chicagoans erroneously believe they're sending to the schools and the parks.
And where that money comes from is essentially the property taxes that are collected from Chicago citizens are skimmed.
That is correct.
In certain districts that are defined geographically.
Literally, that's how it happened. But as we've discussed many times, in fact, by skimming those taxes, they cause everybody throughout the city to pay more in taxes. So in fact, it's an extra tax that everybody in the city of Chicago pays, whether or not their particular community or home is in a TIF district. So that's why I just say it's a surcharge added.
I was just trying to illuminate for our listeners the source of that money. It's from these districts in which property tax payment that they're making does not go to all the taxing body. It goes to a special fund in the city of Chicago. And that's
that
where all
correct.
This money is coming
yes.
from. So let's go back to the 7 TIF districts that the mayor announced were going to be suspended and eventually shut down. Do you know how long these 7 districts would have lasted if not ended early?
So once again, going back to TIFology, a TIF district lasts for 24 years. They say 23, but it's actually 24. Everything in this program is a lie. At which point it can be extended for another 12 years, that would take a special act of the General Assembly. And we have extended TIF districts. We extended one in the South Loop to pay for the wonderful DePaul basketball arena and Marriott Hotel complex that the mayor says we so desperately need. To answer your question, each of those districts has a different expiration date. Some would expire by 2020. I believe LaSalle is like 2032. I think one of those TIF districts is due to expire in 2017. So there's a range. But again, if they wanted to, they could extend them.
So you're talking about the 24-year expiration, but if they were extended, it could be even longer.
Another 12 years, like they extended the one in the South Loop. So if the mayor had some bright idea for, you know, wasting the money, he could get the General Assembly to extend it. They're routinely passed, those extensions. I chose to be optimistic in that particular column that we're discussing today and take this as a good sign that he will make do on his pledge to phase them out sometime in the next couple of years. So if the mayor's good on his word and he does cut them out, this is an additional source of money for the Board of Education and the Park District and all the taxing bodies. The issue, this gets a little complicated, has to do with what is a genuine obligation that we absolutely positively have to spend this TIF dollars on, and what are some of the not genuine obligations that the mayor might be holding money back to pay for, and that's uncertain.
We don't have any transparency around that.
No.
There's no documentation that the mayor is producing to say, here's why it's obligated and how.
That is correct. And Tom Tresser, We've talked about him in the past. He's an activist, citizen activist.
With the now defunct Civic Lab.
But he still has his TIFF
Illumination project.
That is correct.
All together now.
And he was, of course, one of the leaders of the movement to stop the Olympics from coming here. He's pressing on with a FOIA request demanding that the city turn over contracts, really specific agreements, so that we can determine exactly how much money we have obligated in all the TIFFs, but in particularly in these 7 TIFFs. My guess is that the mayor has just come. He has settled on the number $25 million a year out of the TIFF funds to be sent back to the taxpayer.
I understand he's a dartboard in his office.
Yes, he's a dartboard in his office. Remember we did this before? Wasn't it like for a while they were fixated on a billion? Everything was a billion, you know what I mean? So I just assume they make all this stuff up anyway. But I chose to be optimistic and take this as a good sign that people like Tom Tresser, people like the Chicago Teachers Union, people like you and me, the people at the Hideout who show up our shows, who have been raising a ruckus on this TIFF slush fund, have forced the mayor to at least pretend that he's reforming this monster. And so he's going to kick back some money every year. And the fact that he's talking about phasing out these TIFFs is a very good sign. In fact, the proof is that it provoked editorials of outrage from Chicago Cranes, which I love, you know.
Let me come back to that in a minute. Before we do, though, I just want to note exactly how much money we're talking about that gets siphoned off from taxing bodies such as Chicago Public Schools, Chicago Park District, etc. Cook County Clerk David Orr released a TIFF report on July 13th, 2015, in which he noted that Chicago added 4 TIFF districts last year. He also said that citizens have never seen a thorough review of how billions of dollars of TIFF funds were spent in the loop. Or said, we, quote, don't have a comprehensive, easy-to-understand audit of how that money was spent project by project, contractor by contractor, dollar by dollar, end quote. And he reported that Chicago TIFF districts siphoned off $372 million of property taxes in 2014, and $422 million in 2013. I have here a copy of his report. He has a nice little graph there showing how much money has been taken each year. And from this, we can estimate that the city collected about $2.1 billion from TIFF districts in the 5 years between 2010 and 2014. So given that number, how much would you estimate TIFF districts have diverted from Chicago Public Schools in those last 5 years?
It's roughly, 52% or 53%? I forget the exact. You have to look at a property tax bill.
So it's at least a billion.
Yes, it's over a billion. If it was 2.1, it's over a billion. That would have gone a long way to paying off this pension nightmare that we have. The counter argument that's put forth by the city is that some of the TIFF dollars are used to build new schools. So some of the TIFF dollars are actually used for schools. So stop whining, Ben.
Which is an interesting argument because you could just have that money in the Chicago Public Schools budget in their capital improvement.
Yes, thank you. It's such a ridiculous argument.
I'm putting it in the other pocket now.
Yes. What's really embarrassing, and it's actually pathetic, is when I hear that argument echoed by school administrators who, of course, owe their job to Mayor Rahm, so they're just going to say what he wants them to say. But they're supposed to be our fiduciary watchdogs for every nickel and dime that goes to the public schools, and they're definitely not. They're allowing the mayor to divert this money every year.
You wrote in your article that, quote, Rahm came into office promising to reform the TIFFs, but kept the scam going long enough to pledge TIFF funds to a new stadium for DePaul and a hotel for Marriott in the South Loop, end quote. You've railed, Ben, about this stadium and hotel development subsidy since its inception.
Yes.
And our regular listeners will know that well.
Yeah, like a lunatic in a park. Yeah, this is terrible.
I wonder what you think about the recent revelation that this development deal was the brainchild in 2011 of Andrew Mooney, who heads the city's planning and development department. Here's what Mooney told the Chicago Tribune's Melissa Harris. Quote, Jim Riley, who was then the head of McCormick Place, told me they really needed 2 things, a new hotel and an arena-type setting. There was a hole in their marketing scheme. In a separate conversation having to do with DePaul's long-term capital plan, they, DePaul, said they very much wanted to bring their basketball team and all of their indoor sports activities back into the city, end quote, DePaul having had its games out there in Rosemont. Mooney continued, I picked up the phone and I said, hey, Jim, and again, he's talking about Jim Riley, head of McPeer, would you have any interest in entering into a partnership with a private institution, meaning DePaul, that would help pay the freight of this thing? And he said, absolutely. And I did the same thing with Father Holzschneider, and he's the head of DePaul. And when both of them expressed that level of interest, I simply pulled the three of them together. Comments?
Well, I would say that observation falls into the category of sort of fiction. I'm sure a lot is left out in there. And I almost don't care how much of what he says is true and not true and how much was the brainchild of that moment. What really matters is that the mayor, who is ultimate public guardian of these funds, signed on to it and became a cheerleader and used his considerable power to get it through the General Assembly, because we needed legislation passed at the state level for this monstrosity, and at the City Council, which needed several pieces of legislation passed. So I don't really believe that commissioner for a department of, what is it, planning or housing, whatever it was called. I don't believe that he had the authority to get this ball going. I think somebody mentioned it to the mayor, put it in his ear, which is generally how really bad ideas happen in Chicago. It was always happening that way.
It's traditional with Mayor Daley.
Traditional Mayor Daley. Somebody would tell him something over dinner. We need this. And the next thing you know,
we got a superstation under Block 37, yeah, you know, that hasn't ever been used.
Yeah, exactly. So really bad ideas happen when the mayors have private chats with people who convince them that it's a good idea.
Moody claims this came to him in the shower. maybe Rahm was texting him.
Well, yeah, Rahm was texting. Well, you know, Rahm has that reputation for like intruding on people in like when they're naked in locker rooms and stuff. So, you know, maybe Rahm popped into the shower when Mooney was scrubbing down.
In Congress.
And goes, yeah.
He did
so,
that.
In Congress, yes. So I really don't know, nor do I care how much of that little story is true or not. What matters is that the most powerful public official in the city of Chicago signed on to it and used his immense power to make it happen to the detriment of taxpayers and the public schools.
All right, let's step back. We were talking about that one particular TIF agreement, but let's step back again around the mayor's scheme to close TIFs in around the Central Business District. Opposing it is, as you mentioned earlier, Crane Chicago Business's Greg Hines. Hines wrote in a piece on July 14th, 2015, titled Emanuel's Foolhardy Move to Kill Off Downtown TIFs. And he wrote, quote, TIF dollars in his tenure, meaning Emanuel, haven't gone to private incentives, but big infrastructure projects needed for our job center's health. Things like new L stations and schools, bridge projects and parks to serve the new loop's residential neighborhoods. And he goes on to say there are plenty of needs. They include the 62-acre site along the river just south of Roosevelt Road. It's come back to life with the economy and soon should house thousands of new residential units that Chicago needs and which will provide lots of tax revenues. But the land needs infrastructure, likely $100 million plus in roads and sewers and the like. The land is in the Jefferson Roosevelt TIF district, but if its spending is frozen, where's Emanuel going to get the money, end quote. And I'm guessing you'd say to Hines that you could get it from a financial transaction.
Yes, Greg, why don't you pay for it since you want that land developed? I know that land. I've hiked that land. I think it's serving a great purpose, just staying vacant at the moment.
It's wetlands now.
It's wetlands. My old pal Greg and I have been debating the TIF issue for a while. Greg has sort of morphed into a modern-day version of Bert Nateris, who is the former alderman from the Loop, who used to always yell at me about being too hard on the TIF program, and that in fact all good things that have ever happened in the downtown area is thanks to one, Mayor Daley, and two, the TIF program. So Greg's sort of picking up the torch from the great Bert Nateris. I don't trust the city when it comes to these development plans. Of all the things we need right now, taking money from the public schools to develop that land that's just south of Roosevelt Road, I think that's the lowest on the list, particularly when we have these enormous obligations that we're facing that are requiring them to cut services in the public schools. So if a private developer cannot, on his or her own, develop that land, then I'd say, well, it should not go at the top of the list of our needs, particularly if we're going to take money from the public schools to pay for it.
Hines seems to be arguing for the intent of tax increment financing, which is using existing tax dollars to make an investment in development that would generate new tax dollars.
That is correct. A good example of this is just south and a little east of that site is I'm blanking on the name of it, but it's a big condominium townhome development where Mayor Daley actually lived.
Central Station.
Central Station. That was TIF funded. I would say that's their great achievement, that they used TIF dollars to prepare that land for development. And then the land is generating big amounts of property tax dollars that it hadn't been developing for. The promise that once the development was completed, they kept pouring the TIF dollars into a bank account, which was just excess slush for Mayor Daley to waste.
So you're saying that that particular development is a good example of an investment that generated lots of property tax money, but then it wasn't terminated.
Right, it wasn't terminated. My debate slash argument discussion with Greg focused on this point. If you take a TIF program in the abstract, just as a device to raise money to fund a particular development, it's a useful tool, no doubt about that. But the way we use it in Chicago is not useful. It turns into a slush fund. So to suddenly have this shadow budget that only the mayor controls, that nobody sees, there's no accounting for it, and to say, well, he used some of it for CTA, so stop complaining. I don't think that's healthy for Chicago. That leads to the kinds of budget nightmares that we're currently having with our schools, where we really can't believe anything they tell us because there's so much finagling going on with these public dollars. So going back to that big tract of land that I believe Tony Resco once owned or had an option on, if the city in its infinite wisdom wants to use TIF dollars to fund a development deal, we should be very prudent about that and very specific, and the money should be cut off as soon as the project is over so that the Board of Ed really does benefit from it. Then we have to ask ourselves, well, do we want that land developed? Is it in our best interest at the moment to develop that huge chunk of land, adding people in the loop? What consequences will that have for the city as a whole if we suddenly develop that area? Maybe it's not in our best interest at this moment.
It would be nice to see a sort of a business case wherein the city evaluates the impact, the real financial impact with respect to anticipated revenues from the property taxes versus, say, increased city services costs, and as you say, population pressure effects, things of that nature.
Yeah, things of that. For instance, I'd like to know what is the vacancy rate for residential and business use in and around that area? Are there enough people coming in?
So you could end up saturating with development.
Yeah, so you're just moving people from A to B, and you're effectively hurting one community to the benefit of another. Really, not even of a community, the benefit of a developer.
Right, it's a zero-sum game.
If a developer thinks, he or she can make money, then he or she should, you know, take the risk. Isn't that what capitalism is all about?
That's what I hear.
I mean, God dang, man.
Speaking of capitalism, let's go to the second part of your article where you advocate for a financial transaction tax.
Yeah.
So again, this is a device wherein transactions in the four trading exchanges in Chicago, things such as stock sales and purchases and bond sales and purchases, would be taxed at a certain percentage or fee per transaction. And you've said recently that you've heard from plenty of people who work in the financial industry who are against that. Do you want to channel some of that opposition for us and give me examples of what their opposition is?
The general opposition can be boiled down to this. They don't want to pay it, which I don't blame them. I mean, I don't like paying taxes.
But I mean, what are the legitimate arguments against it?
Legitimate?
What are their stated arguments against it?
Their argument is that it would be an onerous tax that would make it difficult, if not impossible, for traders to operate in Chicago, and that the loss of profits would force the Chicago Mercantile Exchange to move out of state. And so we would lose this industry from Chicago. I don't believe them that it would be onerous and would force them to move. I think that's a claim that that industry is making because they don't want the tax. And number two is, well, you got to do what you got to do. I mean, you want to leave Chicago. What do we get from having you in Chicago? If we can't tax your transactions, what benefit do we get? On one hand, you're really proud that you're cutting jobs as you move away from open pit trading and you head into the age of computers. You're really proud of that. Like, I've been reading all these articles in Cranes. Oh, we miss the days of yelling at each other and spitting in our faces, but this is so effective because, you know, we get to keep more of the profits because we don't have as many people working for us. Well, if the average guy is not benefiting through jobs, what do I care if you're in Pohunk, Indiana?
Indianapolis.
Right? Yeah, you guys dying to go to Indiana. Go to Indiana already. I've never seen an industry want to go to Indiana so
remember
bad.
That song, Indiana Wants Me?
Yeah.
Lord, I can't go back there.
Go already.
Well, some argue that people won't physically pick up and move. I cherry-picked one of your opponent's claims. Here's someone who commented on your article on the Reader's website. Quote, while a few futures, like the Standard & Poor's ones, these are futures on things like commodities and livestock, like hogs and wheat mm-hmm. and corn and stuff like that, are exclusively exchanged in Chicago, most of the others can be traded on other markets. What the financial transaction tax would do is create an incentive for the buyer and sellers of the derivatives to move away from Chicago exchanges. So he's saying the derivatives as opposed to these futures. There are all different instruments being traded.
Okay.
They say it is not that the Chicago Board of Options Exchange is going to leave Chicago, but that many of its customers would. The CME Group, which owns a couple of the exchanges here, could just reroute the transactions to New York City, where the New York Mercantile Exchange is, which CME also owns. They may not do so if the tax was light. But if it is light, it won't make anything near $1 billion, which is what some say this tax would yield, let alone $100 billion. Pennies a trade won't cut it either. Even if you charged a nickel for every transaction on the Chicago Board of Options Exchange, you would take in $65 million. Not chump change, but nowhere near a billion. End quote. So what this critic is saying is that the exchange wouldn't up and leave to Indianapolis, but this is kind of like raising the cigarette tax and then people go and buy their cigarettes across the border, right?
Yeah, it's a similar argument. We still have a cigarette tax, don't we? Have we gotten rid of the, oh, have we decided, you know what? That cigarette tax, people go in Indiana, let's just get rid of the cigarette tax. Let me put it again. They don't want the tax. I threw this argument out there for discussion. I'm just absorbing it myself at the moment. But I'm listening to the opposition that's coming out, and I don't find it very convincing. I'm finding them saying, well, you won't make as much. Well, we'll make something. Right now, we need everything we get. Mayor Rahm's ready to tax Netflix. You know, he slapped the tax on my phone bill last year, your phone bill too. Lord knows where that money's going to. You know, there's always fines and fees that the mayor's sticking to us. So his attitude is every little bit helps. So, okay, $65 million. That helps. That's a start. The larger issue is of these traders making their trades in New York. Well, that argues for a federal tax. But as you pointed out to me, Dave, there's financial transaction taxes all around the world. There's still businesses that are trading in these countries and these places. New York has a financial tax. So I don't see how you could avoid it to a certain degree if it goes nationwide. My bottom line point is this, which I keep returning to. I don't see the benefit of having the Chicago Mercantile Exchange in Chicago if they're shutting down jobs and moving to offsite trading through computers. Please explain to me what the benefit is. What do we as the average citizen gain from having them call Chicago their home? The larger argument is this. This is an exceedingly profitable industry that's not getting taxed on the money it's making, the huge amounts of money. That's how we fund government to a certain degree. So the arguments that I'm getting back from the people who are in this industry is that it's too fragile an industry to sustain a tax, that the profits they're making are so close to the margin that any little tax will either drive them out of business or force them to move to South Dakota or wherever they're going to move. And they're going to come up with some crazy cockamamie system where they could still live in Chicago, make trades with a company called the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, but they'll set up some kind of like Cayman Island scam.
Why not? If you don't have open pit trading and it's all done on the internet.
Then what's the big deal about having them in Chicago? I've been making this argument now for 3 years. You can't have it both ways. You can't say what a great contribution you make to the city of Chicago and then say you can't tax us because that'll drive us out of Chicago. What's the contribution? In the old days, you used to tell me there were hundreds of workers who flooded LaSalle Street to work in these industries, and then they would go get their hair cut at the barbershop, and then they would go to the restaurant and have cocktails and tip the bartender. So there was like this recycling of their dollars. Well, now they're pulling back on that. What are you bringing us?
What do we need them for?
And please, if you do leave, please take Chicago off the name. Okay? You can't be the Chicago Mercantile Exchange if you're in Indiana. You could be the Indiana Mercantile Exchange. Yeah, that'll get you really far. Like, in Indiana. You guys are dying to go to Indiana. So go. Dave, they want to have it both. And then they throw these convoluted, complicated arguments at you that show how they're barely making even. I'm like, I'm feeling sorry. I'm weeping for them. Because, you know, it's like, then get out of the business. You know what I'm saying? Just go to another business. Become a school teacher. All right? It's a lot more secure.
Let's drill down a little bit into the weeds.
Okay.
Some mixed metaphors. Let's talk about how the financial transaction tax might actually work. Proposals for a state financial transaction tax have been floated by 31st District State Representative Mary Flowers of Chicago, the most recent of which is House Bill 2929, which Flowers introduced in 2014. Here I'm reading from the bill. Quote, the tax is imposed at a rate of $1 per contract for all transactions for which the underlying asset is an agricultural product and $2 per contract for all other contracts. The term financial transaction means a transaction involving the purchase or sale of a stock contract, futures contract, swap contract, credit default swap contract, or options contract, but does not include a transaction involving securities held in a retirement account or a transaction involving a mutual fund, end quote. Proponents argue that some of these products are not offered in other exchanges. One proponent said, quote, it's not like they can jump ship to another exchange, at least not until those services migrate, unquote. So it refutes the argument we were talking about earlier. You've spoken with Flowers recently. What does she think of financial transaction tax?
Well, we talked in this most general philosophical way how important it is to find a new source of money for our dead broke public schools that have tremendous obligations and seem incapable of finding money to pay those obligations. The basic problem, as Flowers and I see it, we see eye to eye on this, is that Chicago skated for the last 15, 20 years on making payments that was obligated to make. And so now we're at a point where our current system of raising money is inadequate to pay off all the debt we have.
Just to clarify that, in 1995, the then Mayor Daley got the General Assembly to agree to allow the city to stop making automatic contributions to the Chicago Teachers Pension Fund.
Yes. And then in addition, we had the ongoing TIF program, which siphoned off, what was it? Do we say it's about $5 to $6 billion from not just the last 5 years, but if you go back throughout the 90s. So that diverted money from our public schools. And then we sold the parking meters for a fraction of their worth. We go on and on.
Just throwing revenue away.
Throwing revenue away. Really boneheaded ideas. God, don't get me started on the Soldier Field monstrosity and how that teamed up with Millennium Park to spend a lot of money. I would argue like Millennium Park is benefit overall, but not Soldier Field. This was the same mayor that most of the leaders of the financial markets supported, not only with their votes if they live in Chicago, but with their contributions and with their just like herd mentality, standing in line, lemming-like peals of adoration for the man. All of a sudden now we're facing huge debts and deficits thanks to the policies of the man that they worshiped and helped elect year after year and made fun of people like you and me because we dared to be against him. And now they say, well, we can't afford. Our existence is too fragile to help out with this obligation and this debt. If you try to seek any money from us, we're going to have to go to Indiana or New Jersey or Anchorage or South Dakota or the Cayman Islands.
Scranton is nice this time of year.
They're going to go to Scranton. So that's generally what Mary Flowers and I discussed. It's the fact that we need money. So where are we going to get the money? The mayor finally is talking about breaking up the TIFs as a way of bringing money back to the public schools. He hasn't gone far enough, but at least he's open to that, all right, which is relatively new. So what else is there? I mean, I've advocated legalizing marijuana and taxing it. Well, the mayor's against that. I don't see the leaders of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, most of whom are probably libertarians, if you ask them, leading the charge on that front. So they're AWOL on that issue. Alderman Pouwar, my own alderman, has talked about a corporate income tax as a way of raising money for Chicago. I don't see CME.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah, good luck with that one. There's been commuter tax proposals, which is sort of like a revival of the old head tax. All these ideas. I don't see the traders coming forth with any ideas. So I'm going to play Mayor Rahm to them. Where are your ideas? You're talking about moving to Indiana. If we put this tax on, we'll come up with an alternative. Is that the level of civic dedication you have to the city of Chicago? You spent the last 20 years promoting the mayoralty of Daley, who threw away our money and let us in debt. And now when we turn to you and say, okay, fellas, let's help erase the debt that your mayor that you supported for 20 years left us with, you go, no, we're going to go to Indiana. Well, then you can't be a Chicago Bear fan, all right? You're going to have to be an Indianapolis Colt fan, all right? If you go to Anchorage, is there a football team in Anchorage or the Cayman Islands?
Check your Hawks jersey at the border.
Yes, no more Blackhawks. Not a Blackhawk fan anymore. You can't wear those little, like, Pat Gain uniforms anymore.
Ben, that's all I've got time for. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Listeners, we always welcome your questions and comments and suggestions for future interviews. You can get those to us via Facebook and Twitter. Search for Inside Chicago Government. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.